following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a Thursday. Oh, we're almost at the end of the week, but not quite there yet. We've got Donald Trump down here in Florida because, what, the White House isn't a good enough place to host Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, I suppose. No, he's got to do it at Mar-a-Lago. You know, they've got to play golf. Today he's down in Key West for some reason. All I know is he marveled about the crowd size, because that's all he cares about. I'm having a rough time today. You know, some days I complain that there's just too much going on and it's hard to keep my head straight. And it's rare these days that we have a slow news day, but that's kind of what's going on now. You know, when Trump is on the golf course and Congress is leaving early this week, they're leaving today. Because there's not enough work to do. I don't know. It's just a weird time. And all morning, I've been reading the news, such as it is, and trying to figure out what to talk about. Howie Klein will be along a little later. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but I'm sure we'll come up with something. But it seems like the lead story today is speculation on whether or not Michael Cohen is going to flip on Donald Trump. It shows you it's a slow news day. So I figured, I'd open up the phones. but honestly, since the Progressive Voices Network moved my showtime, so I'm not on live anymore, they air the show at 6 p.m. Eastern, the phones don't ring the way they used to. So I know we do have a caller on the line. It's the best husband in the world. His name is David. Hi, David.
Hi, darling.
How are you?
I'm well. there are a couple of stories that maybe you overlooked that I would like to talk about, if that's okay.
Okay.
The first story is from my number one favorite state in the union, Tennessee, from the ironically named town of Friendship, Tennessee.
Okay.
There was an incident where a black family and 80% of the population of this ironically named town is white. A black family moved into the town and rented a house, and they were shortly thereafter greeted by the words "Get out, niggers," painted on their house.
Oh my God.
And the mayor of this ironically named town says he doesn't think that it's racist, the town, that there's anyone in the town that's racist. And he's more concerned about getting that building painted back because it's on such a nice corner and is such a pretty building.
Oh, my
and
God.
The thing that really made this jump out at me was immediately before I happened to see that story, there was a story of a similar nature from Michigan. Now, who would think that a story from Tennessee and Michigan would be related when it comes to racism? But there was an incident in Tennessee where a whole bunch of trucks flying Confederate flags and screaming racial epithets drove by a school to the point where I believe the school had to be shut down or something as a result of it. The point being, racism is alive and well in the number one. Number two, usually when people think about racism and racist incidents, they tend to think about the South. Right. I know I always have, and any time I've driven through the South, I've only stopped for gas and food and if it was necessary to sleep, and then get right back in the car and keep driving. But as someone who has traveled to just about every state in the Union, I think I've missed two, I find that racism is flourishing everywhere. Truly one of the most segregated cities I've ever been in is Chicago.
Really?
And, oh yes, Chicago is very, very segregated. The black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods are very well defined, and you seldom see people from either one of those areas go into the other for any other purpose than traversing it to get to something on the other side.
You know, I think racism has always been with us. I don't think we ever got to that post-racial society that we were told we had entered with the election of Barack Obama.
But we had a black president.
Right, I know. But I think the election of Donald Trump has enabled the racists to come out front and be more open with their racism rather than be closeted, because it's approved of at the highest levels.
And to put the cherry on top of the whipped cream of this sundae, there was a fraternity suspended at Syracuse University. There is video available online of the pledges having to recite that they will always have hate in their heart for niggers, spicks, and kikes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So the fraternity has been suspended. So racism and anti-Semitism, as an added bonus, are alive and well. And I really think that all you have to do is scratch the slightest into the thin veneer of civilization that exists in this country, and that stuff comes bubbling to the surface.
I agree. And I think it's getting worse. It's getting worse because of the mood from the top of the country, because Donald Trump sees
there are fine people on both sides.
Exactly.
And I'm sure there are fine people at that fraternity.
Facetiously so.
Of course. So that is the sad story that I wanted to share today. And hope that the people who listen to the Nicole Sandler show will not be affected by it directly or indirectly, and can find a way in their hearts to not turn the other cheek, but to actively seek these bastards out and find a way to change their hearts, because these people, they're trying to cover up the inadequacy in themselves by blaming other people. That's one of the things that I've always noticed when I have confronted anti-Semites in my life. And that is how convenient it must be for you people to have someone or some group to blame all your inadequacies and failures upon. Mm-hmm. Do you really think that that's what has kept you down? That there is a group out there that cares much about you failing, that they will divert their attention from their own lives and families and dreams in order to crush yours.
Right. No, people who have that kind of hatred in them have some kind of holes in their hearts, I guess. It's the only way I can describe it. There's got to be a real defect within a person to have that kind of hatred.
They've been raised that way.
Yep.
Hate is not something that's born. It's taught. It's like the song from South Pacific that you've got to be carefully taught.
That's
to
right.
Hate all the people your relatives hate.
That's right. I've played that on this show before.
Yes. Well, that's probably one you won't get hit with copyright violations for.
No, I will. If I play any music, I'll get copyrighted. I can play up to 30 seconds of a song. That's about it. That's why there's no music on this show anymore.
I know. I'm so much the worse for it. But that's life in our wonderful litigious society.
Yes, it is.
But that's another subject for another day, I guess.
Yep. Well, David, thank you for a great call. It's funny, the dormouse in the chat room said, the voice sounds familiar. This is my wonderful husband, David, who called in to get us started today, because I'm just having a brain fade today. I'm just having a hard time getting going. It's one of those days. There's so much shit going on, and it's all bullshit. It's all and it's a lot of Trump what we'll have in what's news, unfortunately, because he did what passes for a news conference last night. Since he took office, Donald Trump has had one press conference. One. What he does now is when there's a foreign leader visiting, they take two questions from the American press and two from the foreign press that's traveling with the foreign leader. And Trump calls that a news conference. It's not a news conference, but that's what passes for it in today's world. So he had one last night, and it will be featured prominently, sadly, in today's What's News segment. David, anything else you want to comment on before I move on to that?
No, that's about it for me. I mean, everything else, as you say, is Trump involved. You know, including Scott Pruitt going to Morocco, to discuss, natural gas, which is not in his purview in Morocco, so that he could then take a stayover, in Paris, because, you know, that is the natural stopover for any flight coming back here.
Right. And you know who the lobbyist for the natural gas in Morocco is, right? The husband of his landlord at his $50 a night room in Washington, D.C.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's entirely reasonable for him to want to check on his future accommodations, I guess.
I suppose. Unbelievable. Yes. All right, David.
All right, darling.
I'll see you.
I love you madly.
I love you, too. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye. See, this is what it's come to. I have to take calls from my husband because you people don't call in anymore because we're not live on Progressive Voices anymore. All right. It is Thursday. Howie Klein will be along, I hope, in a little while. But first, let's get to What's News. And we'll do it live today.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, here we go. Donald Trump met with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe at Mar-a-Lago on Wednesday in what passes for a news conference in the Trump era. They spoke to the press and took a few questions Wednesday evening, with Trump commenting about his upcoming planned meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un to discuss denuclearization. The president said he hoped the meeting would be successful, but that he'd walk out if it wasn't.
I will be meeting with Kim Jong-un in the coming weeks to discuss the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Hopefully that meeting will be a great success, and we're looking forward to it. It would be a tremendous thing for North Korea and a tremendous thing for the world. So we will be doing everything possible to make it a worldwide success.
Sure.
Not just for the United States or South Korea or North Korea or Japan, but for the entire world. It's a historic moment, and possibly beyond that if it works out properly. Our discussions today reaffirm the close cooperation between the United States and Japan on the issue of North Korea and our common defense. We will not repeat the mistakes of previous administrations. Our campaign of maximum pressure will continue until North Korea denuclearizes. We've never been in a position like this with that regime. If I think that it's a meeting that is not going to be fruitful, we're not going to go. If the meeting when I'm there is not fruitful, I will respectfully leave the meeting.
This whole thing is just a disaster waiting to happen. I hope I'm wrong on that one. I hope I'm proven wrong and Donald Trump winds up with the Nobel Peace Prize. I know that's kind of hysterical. It's almost as funny as Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize. But as he likes to say, we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, because Trump has no conception of how foreign affairs work, how diplomacy works, he got nothing in return for agreeing to meet with the North Korean dictator. He was asked by one of the American press there about the three U.S. prisoners still being held in North Korea.
The fact is that they do have three prisoners. We have been talking about them. We're negotiating now. We are doing our very best. As you know, they've been there a long time. And it's harsh treatment. We fought very hard to get Otto Warmbier back. And when we came back, he was in very, very bad condition. It was a very sad event. We are likewise fighting very diligently to get the three American citizens back. I think there's a good chance of doing it. We're having very good dialogue. We will keep you informed. But we are in there, and we are working very hard on that.
But again, it was not a condition of the meeting, which makes you wonder. Of course, the president got a question about the fates of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and Special Counsel Robert Mueller. As usual, he didn't answer the question, but of course, he did deflect.
On the Mueller probe, have you concluded that it's not worth the political fallout to remove either Special Counsel Mueller or Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein?
Jennifer, I can say this, that there was no collusion. And that's been so found, as you know, by the House Intelligence Committee.
No, it hasn't.
There's no collusion. There was no collusion with Russia other than by the Democrats, or as I call them, the obstructionists, because they truly are obstructionists. So we are giving tremendous amounts of paper. This was really a hoax created largely by the Democrats as a way of softening the blow of a loss, which is a loss that, frankly, they shouldn't have had from the standpoint that it's very easy for them. They have a tremendous advantage in the Electoral College. And this is what it is, and this is where it came from. You look at the kind of money that was paid. Probably some went to Russia. You look at Podesta having a company in Russia where nothing happened and people don't talk about it. You look at the fact that their server, the DNC server, was never gotten by the FBI.
Unbelievable.
Why did the FBI
that he's going off on this.
They go in, they wouldn't get the server. This is a hoax. As far as the investigation, nobody has ever been more transparent than I have instructed our lawyers. Be totally transparent. I believe we've given them 1.4 million pages of documents, if you can believe this.
I can't believe anything you say.
Haven't used,
not a word,
that I know of, or for the most part, presidential powers or privilege. So we are hopefully coming to the end. It is a bad thing for our country, very, very bad thing for our country.
You're a bad thing for
but
our country.
There has been no collusion. They won't find any collusion. It doesn't exist. As far as the two gentlemen you told me about, they've been saying, I'm going to get rid of them for the last 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and they're still here. So we want to get the investigation over with, done with, put it behind us, and we have to get back to business with negotiating with this gentleman and plenty of others. But this gentleman is a very tough negotiator, and we have to focus on that. Thank you very much.
He leaves me speechless. This is in what passes for a press conference. Now, after the Q&A, the two and two questions were over, and I guess they were saying goodbye. Trump decides to answer one more question, in which he protests again. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. That nobody's been tougher on Russia than he has been.
There's been nobody tougher on Russia than President Donald Trump.
Oh, give me a break.
Between building up the military, between creating tremendous vast amounts of oil. We raised billions and billions of dollars extra in NATO. We had a very, very severe, we were talking about it a little while, fight in Syria recently, a month ago, between our troops and Russian troops. And that's very sad. But many people died in that fight. There has been nobody tougher than me. With the media, no matter what I did, it's never tough enough because that's their narrative. But Russia will tell you there has been nobody tougher than Donald Trump.
Russia's laughing at us.
And then the other night, we had a strike in Syria, which was
that accomplished
absolute
nothing.
Precision.
Nothing.
I leave it with this. With all of that said, if we can get along with China, and if we can get along with Russia, and if we can get along with Japan and other nations, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Just remember that. If we got along with other nations, that's good, not bad. Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay. And that's how he ended the little presser. We'll get back to the news, but there's another call coming in. This from the 562 area code. Hi, you're calling from Southern California?
Yes, Nicole. I love your show, and I'll be sending you another check soon.
Oh, thank
but
you.
But if you can, if any way possible, you can keep that man's voice off of the air. Just kind of, you know, give us a synopsis of what he said, because he's a liar.
He is a liar. And you know, but sometimes you just have to
keep repeating his lies.
It is stunning to listen to the stuff that spews out of his mouth, though. Sometimes you just, you listen to it and can't believe this is coming from the person who is, has been elected president of the United States.
Okay, well, sorry to interrupt. Here's news, or what's news? And,
that's okay.
Hi to Howie.
Okay, I'll pass that along.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That's enough of Trump for now. The New York Times reported today that Eric Schneiderman, New York's attorney general, is urging state lawmakers to modify state law so prosecutors would be free to charge in local court anyone federally pardoned. In a statement, Schneiderman said, quote, "We are disturbed by reports that the president is considering pardons of individuals who may have committed serious federal financial tax and other crimes, acts that may also violate New York law. We must ensure that if the president or any president issues such pardons, we can use the full force of New York's laws to bring such individuals to justice." You go, Eric Schneiderman. All right, now the phones are ringing. Let's go back to it. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Nicole, it's Charlene from Gilbert, Arizona.
Hi, Charlene.
And hi, how are you doing?
Hanging in there.
I know, I feel the same way you do. I'm in such a great funk. Anyway, I was wondering when you have Howie on today, if you could ask him two things. One, ask him what he thinks is going on with the special election for Trent Frank's seat. There's an female ER doctor running for his seat, and I don't usually watch local news, but I did last night for some reason, and I saw a really nasty ad against her, really dirty ad.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Harrell. I don't remember her last name. And then the other thing I would love you to ask him is, who are we going to vote for senator? You know, we got Kristen Sinema running from the Democratic Party. And I don't know who's running from Republican, but I would never vote Republican.
Right.
You know, if there was a serious...
Here's the thing, I adore Howie Klein. You know that he's on with me every week, and I wouldn't have it any other way. He warns us about Kristen Sinema all the time.
Right.
You know, from and Howie has vowed at this stage in his life that he doesn't vote for the lesser of two evils. At this point, I'd hate to say it, but I'd hold my nose and vote for her to vote against the Republicans.
Well,
we got to get the Republicans out of power.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking.
You know,
I did the same thing with Hillary.
I certainly wanted
Bernie, but when Bernie didn't get the nomination, what else could we do?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
All right. Well, have a great day, and I'll be listening for the remainder of the show.
Okay. Thanks so much. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Back to the news. In Kansas, here's some Kris Kobach news for you. A federal judge found Kris Kobach, Secretary of State and candidate for governor of Kansas, Kris Kobach, guilty on contempt of court charges for failing to follow her order to register voters who had signed up to vote at the DMV, but had failed to present proof of citizenship documents to the state. And a related, somewhat related story in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo, facing a primary challenge from actress and activist Cynthia Nixon, announced an executive order to immediately restore voting rights to some 35,000 parolees. You see why I always talk about how important primaries are. That's the only reason Andrew Cuomo did that, is because of the challenge from Cynthia Nixon. Cuba has a new president. Raul Castro has stepped down, marking the first time in almost 60 years that a Castro won't be the nation's leader. Vice President Miguel Diaz-Canel was nominated yesterday by the Cuban General Assembly to be the sole candidate to succeed Castro, and he was approved today. That's how elections go in Cuba, people. In his first speech as president, Diaz-Canel emphasized continuity with the past and said that Raul Castro will remain an important and ongoing political role at the helm of the Communist Party of Cuba. All right, let's go back to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Proudskill again.
Hey, Proudskill.
I'm just hanging around here in Alabama, and I'm disgusted about the mass media is deciding not to criticize Comey.
Well, some have. I'm not the mass media, and I've already said my piece about Comey. I'm not even going to read his book. I've heard enough of him. What are your thoughts on Comey? Why should he be criticized?
Because I don't even think he was a good FBI director to begin with. I mean, there was a lot of problems in the New York FBI office. He had a mass killer on the lam that he ignored, Whitey Bulger. It's just, I mean, he was bad to begin with. Mm. I mean, they should have said something.
Do you think, as I do, that his weighing in on the Hillary Clinton email investigation in public weighed on the election that put the finger on the scale for Trump to become president?
Oh, very definitely. Most definitely. Another point that is getting ignored is about the press conference with our fearless leader and the Japanese Prime Minister, mm-hmm. Abe.
Yeah.
And this is the second such meeting he's had at Mar-a-Lago.
Yes.
And I am thinking this is horrible. He is treating the leader of one or more important allies, second rate by not even meeting with him in Washington.
He probably thinks of it as an upgrade, you know, because the White House is a dump, according to Trump.
I know. And another point, we have a congressional candidate who will probably win the nomination. And the third congressional district that represents Dothan, Alabama, I don't think she's going to win, Mallory Hagan.
Mm-hmm.
She is a Miss America winner and a TV anchor in Columbus, Georgia. But her website openly uses the word fascist to describe Trump and his followers.
Wow.
So that is pretty interesting.
Well, that's good to know. At least someone's calling him out.
Well, keep up the good work. And I just want to know one more thing. I just hope this dog whistle politics that Trump is using, that more Americans get tired of it and vote for the opposition. I really do.
I hope so, too. November's still a long way away, so we got to keep the pressure on. Proudskill, thank you for the call. All right. Howie Klein's going to be with us in just a few minutes. We'll take a quick break and come back on the other side with Howie Klein to talk politics next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler. NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hear about a firecracker for the common good today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Some are born with good luck, but I was 30 years old before Lady Luck smiled on me with full radiance, arriving in the form of a petite bundle of feistiness, smarts, political savviness, warmth, playfulness, and all-around beauty, named Susan DeMarco. I apologize for turning inward for a personal commentary today, but DeMarco, as she's called by all who've known her, is an admirable example of the virtue of citizen activism, unsung heroes and heroines standing up for the common good. She's been a teacher, leader of public interest groups, investigative journalist, author of 3 books, government official, public policy innovator, mentor, and lifelong champion of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. In other words, as one activist put it, she's a firecracker. Alas, though, on the 1st of April, DeMarco slipped away from me and all who loved her. I was alone with her when she drew her last breath, 18 hours after I asked the hospital to honor her previously written directive that all life support tubes be removed from her body. Crushingly sad, of course, yet deeply rewarding, for she not only outmaneuvered the blood clot that had slammed into her brain, but also our society's high-tech medical imperative that she be held captive in her own severely damaged body. And how very DeMarco that she managed to fly away on the 1st, which ironically was both Easter Sunday and April Fool's Day. This is Jim Hightower saying, above all, DeMarco was a free spirit, full of life, curiosity, and imagination. For example, she delighted in the diversity of birds that populated her big South Austin yard, and she often had magical dreams of flying with them. She even imagined her final exit as a joyous, avian-like experience, as expressed in an old, uplifting gospel song she liked, I'll Fly Away. And that's just what she did.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a Lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Every Thursday we check in with our friend Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America PAC and talk politics, find out what's on his mind. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good. And you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. It's one of those just weird days where there's a lot going on, but it's almost like a slow news day. You know, which hasn't happened very often in the Trump era.
What you mean.
Yeah, it's almost like we're waiting for the other shoe to drop, I think.
There are so many of them.
That there are. In fact, you know, this morning I'm looking around and trying to think of what I'm going to talk about at the top of the show. And it seemed like the lead story was all conjecture on whether or not Michael Cohen would flip on Donald Trump.
A silly story in my view. You're right, all conjecture and no one knows, and it's weird. I mean, there's a way to look at it from the point of view of what's going to happen. And, you know, is Trump actually offering him a pardon, which is completely illegal, and to make him flip,
right?
Make him not. I mean, you know, it's weird. It's a very, very strange situation.
Well, the pardoning of Scooter Libby, which came out of left field, and then you had Trump saying, "I don't even know the man." It just seems like he's been treated badly for so long. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, obviously, that seemed to everybody to be sending a signal,
right?
That hey, you know, I'll pardon you, just like I'll pardon the schmuck.
Yeah. Yeah, which I wouldn't put past him. There's a great story today out of New York where the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is introducing legislation or urging state lawmakers. He can't introduce legislation. He's urging state lawmakers to modify the law there so prosecutors could charge in New York local courts anyone who was federally pardoned.
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird, but great.
Yeah, more power to them. So what's on your mind today? What are you thinking about today?
Well, you know, the thing that's got me the most excited is that we're starting a pack to raise money for Ted Lieu to see if we can get Ted Lieu to stand up to what's looking like inevitable, but isn't inevitable. So what I'm talking about is at some point Nancy Pelosi and her leadership team, which as I've said is geriatric, to put it mildly, mm-hmm. they're going to step down.
Yep.
And then what happens? So they it seems to me that they have recruited someone just like them, Joe Crowley. So Joe Crowley, we've talked about him in the past, but he's basically the machine boss of Queens. And he was given a congressional seat, which is part of Queens and part of the Bronx. And he lives in Virginia, doesn't pay any attention to his seat and the residents of Queens and the Bronx. And now they've picked him to follow in Pelosi's footsteps.
Wow.
And it's pretty terrible. He's been the leader of the New Dems. Once he decided he wants to be the speaker, he left the New Dems. He had been the leader of the New Dems for many, many years. But you can't be speaker and be the head of the New Dems. There's some, I don't know. I mean, just the same way that Pelosi left the Congressional Progressive Caucus at a certain point in her career, he left the New Dems. But in reality, he's still a New Dem. He's also tried to clean up his voting record because he wants to get progressives to vote for him. And I've been thinking, is anyone going to be that stupid? And the answer is yes. I've talked to several progressives, and they say, oh, look how he's changed. Look how great he is now.
Uh-oh.
And one of them even said he's going to whip for him to try to get people to vote for Crowley.
Wow.
Yeah, horrible, absolutely horrible. So I've been saying, you know, we need at least to have a progressive run and to give people a choice. I'm kind of hopeful that Ted Lieu is willing to do that. He's not going to run against Pelosi, but it seems that he may, if he sees a lot of support, he may run against, or he may run for the seat that Pelosi evacuates. So I started a page, an Act Blue page to raise money for him, or to raise money just for that.
Uh-huh.
Called the Progressive Speaker Fund.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've been very excited about that and, trying to figure it out. It's a complicated thing, trying to, you know, figure out how best to do it, you know, without offending Ted, without offending his staff and uh-huh. without offending Pelosi, et cetera. So I'm working on that, and that's exciting to me.
And that's
something. It was funny because at the same time, just you know, as I'm working on that, Ted posted a tweet talking about how he had gotten a questionnaire from the NRA. So in other words, they sent it to everybody. So they're offering every member of Congress their endorsement. Just fill out this questionnaire, and we'll rate you based on that. So Ted posted what he sent them. You can't see the whole questionnaire, but he wrote in his own handwriting on the questionnaire, basically two things. First of all, why haven't you answered my letter about all the money that you've taken from Russia and put into American elections? And without going into the details, what he was referring to was the money laundering from the Kremlin into the NRA, which the NRA spent on Trump's election. So highly illegal, and Ted wants the NRA to give him the facts on it, which they're refusing to do. And then the other part of what he put in his tweet was, oh, and by the way, please give me an F. Yeah.
That's good.
So, yeah, a lot of Democrats have Fs anyway from the NRA, and a lot of them are now talking about, yes, I have an F. They're bragging now that they have F from the NRA. And, you know, there are still – and I put this in the Post, which I think is coming out, I don't know, either tonight or tomorrow, that there are some Democrats who take money still to this day, take money from the NRA, blood money basically, and who try to get A's from the NRA.
Yeah,
and I have a list of them in the Post.
In fact,
and the other part of it is how the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, is not just supporting candidates who are, you know, playing footsie with the NRA and get A's and have long records of supporting the NRA. They're not just supporting them; they're actually recruiting them. So, and not recruiting them despite that, recruiting them because of that. The DCCC, and I think you and your listeners know what I think of the DCCC, but they think that there are certain districts where being a member of the NRA is a positive thing, and they're going around and finding these dreadful, I mean really dreadful, state legislators who have A or A-plus from the DCCC and have been very, very strong allies of the DCCC, and they're recruiting them.
You mean the NRA?
And sometimes to run against progressives, often to run against progressives.
You have a post up now about this guy, Jeff Van Drew from New Jersey, who is a perfect poster child of that.
Yes, Jeff Van Drew is, you know, yes, he's an NRA ally, but that's only one bad thing about Jeff Van Drew. Jeff Van Drew is just absolutely terrible. And I can't understand why the DCCC has recruited him. There are a couple of really good candidates running as well, and they are, you know, absolutely trying to crush those other candidates. They're both African American progressives. One is a woman and one is a guy, and these are really good candidates. And the DCCC is trying to destroy them on behalf of Jeff Van Drew, who's a state senator. And it's not just that he's got an A-plus from the NRA and has gotten lots of money from the NRA. He voted against marriage equality. He voted against choice. He voted against raising the minimum wage.
Wow.
He constantly votes against environmental bills in the state senate. I mean, this guy, you couldn't paint a picture of a worse Democrat, if you want to call him a Democrat, than Jeff Van Drew. So Jeff Van Drew was immediately endorsed, of course, by the Blue Dogs, endorsed by the New Dems, and then the DCCC endorsed him as well and put him on their red to blue page. And it's just disgusting. So people won't even know, you know, how terrible he is, because, you know, the DCCC doesn't talk about his voting record at all. They just say, oh, we're a great candidate we have here in an open Republican seat, and we're going to win this seat with this great candidate. And they don't tell people how bad he is. They don't tell donors how bad he is, and they don't know. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day who was telling me who his favorite candidates are, and he mentioned Jeff Van Drew.
Oh, no.
And I asked him if he has any awareness of Jeff Van Drew's long and very consistent record in the state legislature. And he had no idea. He said, tell me. It can't be that bad.
Oh.
And when I told him, he blanched. He was so shocked and so horrified, he didn't know what to do. He couldn't believe that the DCCC would have fooled him again and so badly. And he was mortified that he had just given $2,700 to Jeff Van Drew.
Oh, my God. It's counterintuitive. It goes against all the all common sense that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee would endorse a guy like this, especially when there are
maybe in November you
right.
could say, well, he's a lesser of two evils,
exactly.
And if he doesn't win, then a Republican. But we're not in November. We're talking about primary season, where there are two really good candidates, especially you know this young guy named
Will Cunningham.
He's an African American young guy who's running, who's really smart, who's had some really good jobs. I mean, Will Cunningham was a homeless child. He grew up really hard, and yet he worked his way. I mean, listen to this, Nicole. He worked his way through Harvard.
Wow.
That's how amazing this guy is. And he's had some really good jobs in Washington. He wound up working for Cory Booker for a while, and then he's had some other jobs since then. And, you know, he's a millennial. He's extremely smart and extremely dedicated, and he's idealistic, and he would make a great member of Congress. And, you know, if he doesn't win the primary and Jeff Van Drew does, I'm sure the DCCC could then, you know, support Jeff Van Drew. But no. They want to destroy Will Cunningham. That's what they're trying to do now.
They don't want there
to be any possibility that he gets the nomination. Well, why not? Why in the hell not? He would make a really incredible member of Congress, and Jeff Van Drew has shown what kind of a member of Congress he'll be. He's shown it. He has years and years of votes. He's got a record that's really long. And we're talking about New Jersey. We're not talking about Alabama or Mississippi.
Right.
I mean, if this is going to be a wave election, it doesn't matter which Democrat. It's a very, you know, close seat. It's, I think, an R plus one. There are not going to be any Republicans in R plus one seats after November. There aren't going to be any Republicans in R plus two seats or R plus three seats. All of those seats are going to be swept away. And the Republicans know it, and so does the DCCC. They're not forced to put in Congress some guy who's homophobic, who's an NRA darling, who is, I mean, how do you vote in New Jersey? How do you vote against raising the minimum wage? I mean, even there are even Republicans who didn't vote against that, but Jeff Van Drew voted against that.
Wow.
He is, you know, when you talk about lesser of two evils, he might not even be the lesser of two evils. There are Republicans who are better than him, not many, but there are some. And the other thing about Jeff Van Drew that gets me crazy is the DCCC has been trying to recruit him for years, and he always says no. He doesn't want to give up his seat to run against this guy, Frank Lobiondo, who has had that seat as a congressman forever. But suddenly, Frank Lobiondo, after Van Drew told the DCCC no again, Frank Lobiondo decided he couldn't keep working with Trump. It was disgusting, and he got out. So he's not running again. He's still in Congress, but he's not running again this year. So suddenly, Van Drew thinks, oh, I can win this. So he says, he calls the DCCC back, and he says, hold on, I'll take the seat.
Wow.
Like, in other words, like they're offering it to him, which
right.
is what they're doing, basically.
Right.
I mean, like I said, any Democrat would win this seat in November. I mean, yes, any Democrat would
whoever
win this
the
seat
Democrat
in November.
Is,
and
will,
they want this horrible blue dog.
Unbelievable.
Horrible. There is no saving grace in Jeff Van Drew. Nothing. There is no reason for anybody to support him. I mean, if you're a Democrat. There's plenty of reason for Republicans to support him. He's the best they're going to get in a wave election like this.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, probably you have listeners who think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. I'm not exaggerating. That's who he is. That's what Jeff – and there. And by the way, I just used him as one example. There are others that are almost as bad as him. I mean, he's the worst. But there are others. There are, you know, ex-Republicans – who are running now. I mean, I ran across one of them in the inland Orange, I'm sorry, the inland San Diego County area.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know much about this guy, and he's running, and he just lied. He said, well, I was a Republican long ago. I saw the light. I realized the Democrats were better. Oh, really? He pulled Republican ballots in 2008, for example. And that was when Obama was running, but
right.
Obama wasn't on the Republican ballot, and that's where he was voting.
Huh.
And then when you look into his lies, you realize that the first time he ever pulled a Democratic ballot in his life was 2016. Now that's not long ago.
No.
Right. And
right.
No. And meanwhile, there is a good, solid progressive running in that same district, and the good, solid progressive, who's ever always been a Democrat, was endorsed by the state party. So California Democratic Party endorsed the other guy, and all of the local people are for this guy. But the DCCC doesn't want him, and the reason they don't want him is again the racism. And people think, oh, the DCCC can't be racist. They are. They always have been. I mean, the people who run that, the staffers who run that, they're the worst of the worst. They are everything that's been bad about the Democratic Party for decades. And you know, they have a political director at the DCCC who is just the worst conservative moron that you can imagine. Just a moron. I mean, you and I talked sometime about Laura Moshe in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this was the guy who destroyed Laura Moshe. I mean, if Laura Moshe wins the nomination, how is she going to possibly beat the Republican now? I mean, after what the DCCC did to her.
Right, the party has gone after her.
Yeah, and they're doing this all around the country. There's another candidate, Levi Tilleman, in the suburbs of Denver. And they're doing the same thing to him. They're trying to destroy him so that even if he wins the primary, he won't win the general election.
Is there anything people can do to fight back against this? Because it's an anathema to everything that the Democrats stand for. And yet here we have the party, the congressional fundraising arm, the congressional election arm of the party, openly working at odds against what the people want.
Well, I mean, my guess, Nicole, is that you don't have too many listeners who give money to the DCCC.
No,
I mean,
no,
they're constantly sending out, you know, help us, you know, defeat the Republicans kind of emails.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, don't support them. Don't support their candidates. You know, they sort of figured out that, you know, people don't like them. So they started another organization that's similar. It's run by a bunch of DCCC and DSCC staffers. And it's called End Citizens United.
Right.
But
we've talked about
do that. Anything to end Citizens United. It has nothing to do with ending Citizens United. It's a nice name. But the only thing they do is support DCCC candidates and DSCC candidates. And they know that the name DCCC and DSCC are so anathema to so many people
mm-hmm.
that, we'll start another organization with the same with a more pleasant name but with the same goals, and we'll trick grassroots voters into donating, and so
amazing.
That's what they've done.
Amazing.
So you know, and they do that a lot, and you know, like I said, I think that your listeners are probably savvy to the DCCC and what they're all about,
mm-hmm.
and they probably don't give to the DCCC. I would guess that. But, you know, so what are you going to do? You've got to talk to your friends. You've got to talk to your family. You've got to talk to your neighbors and tell them the DCCC is not our friend.
Right.
The DCCC is the bad guys. Certainly in primaries. You know, I mean, I've made up my mind that I don't play the lesser of two evils game anymore. I've
mm-hmm.
told you
mm-hmm.
I don't vote for lesser of two evils candidates anymore. I don't care how bad the Republican is. If the DCCC is offering up people like Jeff Van Drew, people like Anthony Brindisi, people like Ann Kirkpatrick, if that's what they want to offer, I am not going to vote for them. They're not going to scare me. And if a Republican winds up winning, you know, I'm sorry that the Republican won, but maybe the DCCC should think about that next time they try to force these wretched candidates
right.
on Democrats.
Right.
I mean, there is something going on now in Syracuse, New York. So, you know, people might not know what Syracuse, New York is. It's far away. It's, you know, a little tiny corner of upstate New York. What are they? Who are they? But yet they went through all this process to find a candidate. And all the counties in the area wound up agreeing. The Democratic parties in all the counties, there were four of them. And they picked a candidate through a Democratic means that took place over months. And she is the candidate everyone wants. Well, suddenly, the DCCC marches in a couple of weeks ago with their own candidate,
oh.
you know, more conservative establishment candidate, and they declare that their candidate is the nominee of the party.
Oh, my God.
And the party chairman in these four counties are flipping out. And they wrote a public letter saying, you know, back away. This is not your area. You know, don't interfere. We don't want you interfering. Mm-hmm. We are the Democratic Party, and please leave us alone. And we will tell you, the people of this district will tell you who won the primary. It's not up to you. And to get, and the DCCC's response, they immediately endorsed their own candidate and put her on the red to blue page. And they're telling donors, don't give money to, you know, to the normal Democratic
right.
Party. Give money to our candidate. And they're telling unions and other Democratic establishments, if you back the candidate of the local Democratic Party, we won't be your friends anymore.
Oh, my God.
And this is what they do. And they're doing it everywhere in the country. And people don't get it. People, I mean, I don't want to give this away by naming the people. I kind of promised I wouldn't. But in another county, in another part of the country, they endorsed a totally incompetent person. And when I asked the DCCC person who's in charge of that, I said, how did this happen? He said, I don't know how it happened. I said, well, it shocked me. And he said, yeah, it shocked me too. And he's supposed to be in charge.
Unbelievable. Hey, Howie, before we run out of time, I got a call from a listener who's in Arizona who asked if you know anything about the special election to replace Trent Franks that's coming up and the candidates there.
Yeah, so I do. It's an extremely red district. It's the kind of district where Democrats don't even pay attention. They don't run anybody. Oh. And there was a poll that was released a couple of days ago that actually shows the Democrat. Well, it's a neck and neck situation.
Wow.
But that means that the swing towards the Democrat has been gigantic. So the Democrat is actually ahead by 1 point. Now, 1 point doesn't mean that she's really ahead. It means that it's a tie because the margin of error in the poll was 3, 4, or 5, something like that.
Sure.
So it doesn't matter. But what does matter is that the swing away from Republicans and towards Democrats is gigantic, like just gigantic. And this is not the kind of district where Republicans lose or where Democrats win. And now it's going to be a really close call next Tuesday. And it's up in the air. The Republicans have spent over $1 million.
Wow.
And the Democrats have spent nothing.
Wow. Wow.
And the Republicans are scared shitless. If they lose this one, it's going to be, you know, deadly for them. I mean, when they lost Pennsylvania, a Pennsylvania seat in the extreme western part of the state, the southwestern part of the state, that definitely added into the impetus for more Republicans to say, well, we're going to not run. I mean, a few days after that, Ryan Costello in the eastern part of Pennsylvania said, I'm out of this. I'm not running. And Paul Ryan, the speaker, decided, you know, he wants to spend more time with his family. And other Republicans have been dropping out, and there are at least another dozen or so who are on the fence. And if they lose the seat in Arizona, or even if it's close, some of them are going to say, hey, this is an R plus 13. My district is an R plus 5. If the Democrats can win an R plus 13 or get close to winning an R plus 13, they're going to win my seat. I don't want that. I'm leaving. And I expect we're going to get quite a few of those in the next month.
Well, good. Let's hope.
Exactly. Good.
Yes. I mean, let's hope that keeps up. There are some polls showing that the generic congressional races are tightening a little bit. And we still have months to go before November.
Yeah. No, don't worry about those polls. They go up and down. They don't really mean anything. It doesn't mean anything when the Democratic generic poll is up by 10. It doesn't mean anything when it's up by 5. They literally mean nothing. You know what means something? What means something is the swing in these special elections.
Right.
Because that is much more predictive than any kind of poll will ever be. That tells you what's happening in real life. So, you know, I urge people to ignore whether they're good or bad, just to ignore that polling. It doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
What means something is the real thing, these special elections. And the swings in the special elections are shocking. I mean, nobody believes that it could be possible. I mean, you're getting situations where Republicans are spending millions of dollars to prevent it. And you're in, you know, deep red districts. We're not talking about swings in blue districts. We're talking about these swings in red districts, and it's all about Trump. you know, I feel bad for the Republican candidates. They're so rejected, but it's not about them being rejected. It's about Trump being rejected. He is an albatross around the neck of the Republican Party now.
Well,
so don't worry about the don't worry about the polls.
All right. Tomorrow on the program, by the way, Howie Klein, we have Jenny Marshall and Dan Cannon coming on. Two great progressive candidates in North Carolina and Indiana. Their primaries coming up on May 8th. We are out of time for today. As always, Howie Klein of Blue America and Down with Tyranny. Thank you so much.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.